It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Benedict Arnold is a name that is perhaps the most infamous in American Revolutionary history. The Continental Army general who switched sides during the war is a fascinating figure. Were it not for his battlefield prowess, the fledgling revolutionaries might very well have been wiped out in 1776. Yet, squashed career hopes, political infighting, and subsequent disappointments led this daring commander to betray the Continental Army and fight for the British. In his book Valiant Ambition, historian and best-selling author Nathaniel Philbrick examines the path of Benedict Arnold from hero to villain and the complicated relationship that General Arnold had with his commander, General George Washington. And we welcome Nathaniel Philbrick to the program. Nathaniel, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
In contrasting Benedict Arnold and Washington, you find two men with considerable leadership skills, but quite different approaches. You write that they were the same, but that also pretty different.
Mm-hmm. You know, they were both very aggressive by temperament. You know, they both wanted to attack in a battlefield situation. But the difference between them was that Arnold couldn't control that aggression. When he wasn't in a battlefield situation, he had a tendency to rub people the wrong way, particularly if you were a fellow officer or a politician. And you know, he had a hard time seeing outside of himself. Washington, on the other hand, had that extraordinary ability to realize that if what he was doing wasn't working, that he should adjust his conduct. He could learn from his mistakes, which is pretty amazing, particularly given the very difficult circumstances he was under. And so he had that ability to look outside the impulsive demands of his own personality, see what was best not only for the country rather than just what he wanted to do, and act on it. And I think, you know, ultimately the difference between them comes down to character.
Of course, Benedict Arnold is painted as a villain in our popular imagination, but there were so many moments in the Revolutionary War in which he really was a pivotal figure in keeping the effort going. He was a skilled leader, and he made some pretty important contributions.
Absolutely. I think that's a surprise. It was a surprise for me, and I think it'll be a surprise for most people. You know, we think of him as evil incarnate, you know, the ultimate traitor, and he ultimately was that. But in the beginning of the war, there was no battlefield commander on either side of the revolution that was better than Arnold. He was the one who took Fort Ticonderoga right at the beginning of the revolution. He marched up to Quebec, earning the title the American Hannibal. He fought this battle of Valcour Island, and then he was largely responsible for the victory at Saratoga. There was just no one who could compare to it. And on top of that, a lot of his personal fortune went to funding the revolution in the first years. And so he put a lot into it. And without him, you could argue that we might not have survived past those first 2 years without Benedict Arnold.
Well, if it's possible to do in a brief amount of time, tell us in particular what happened in October of 1776 on Lake Champlain.
It's a little-known battle, and it's a naval battle, which I found surprising. I didn't realize Arnold was a great mariner, and he was. But it was called the Battle of Valcour Island on Lake Champlain, a key waterway that if the British could go down from Canada through Lake Champlain, take Fort Ticonderoga, and then on to the Hudson River, they could connect with the British that had already taken New York and divide New England from the rest of the colonies. And Arnold was the only thing between that and really the loss of the revolution in 1776. And he had a fleet of 15 little boats just below what's now Plattsburgh, New York. And the British had this huge invasionary force coming down, even included a three-masted square-rigged ship with cannons. And Arnold fought them to a draw in the Battle of Valcour Island. I mean, for 8 hours, they just hammered at one another with their cannons. And it looked like, as night came on, that they would be trapped in tiny Valcour Bay. But Arnold was able to, in a really brilliant maneuver, get everyone in his fleet out of there, escaping along the trees at night, sailing south, and eventually making their way to Fort Ticonderoga. And so this victory convinced the British that it was too late in the year to take Fort Ticonderoga. They'd save it for the following year. And this really saved America in that first year and set up what would be one of the great victories of the Revolution, the Battle of Saratoga a year later.
We're talking with best-selling author and historian Nathaniel Philbrick. His latest book is called Valiant Ambition. It's about Benedict Arnold, George Washington, and the American Revolution. You mentioned that Benedict Arnold spent a fair amount of his personal fortune funding the revolution. Let's talk a little bit about how Benedict Arnold had that fortune, and he was ambitious politically, but he played out some shady dealings in business and in his quest for social climbing to achieve the status that he did.
Yes. Well, he suffers a terrible injury at the Battle of Saratoga. He can't walk for a year. The injured leg will be 2 inches shorter than the other one. And he's mad. He's angry. You know, he's lost money in the battle and gotten nothing for it. And he becomes military governor of Philadelphia, and he believes it's time for him to make back some of that money. And so he puts together a number of shady business deals, none of them technically illegal necessarily, but shady nonetheless. And he enjoyed the finer things in life. He liked to live like an aristocrat, and to do that he needed money. And so his need for money and the fact that he was kind of upset at how he was being treated by people, fueled his gradual creep towards treason.
You mentioned the injury. By the time he was injured in the Battle of Saratoga, he, of course, was one of the more successful military figures of the Revolutionary War. And he thought that this was his path to greater rank, to greater status. Others sort of thought that, too. But there was political squabbling happening at the time. And he was passed over for promotion, which the final say on that, I guess, was the Continental Congress. Can you explain a little bit why Benedict Arnold was denied advancement in rank?
Yeah. When we think of the Revolution in Washington, we think he was able to do pretty much what he wanted. But the fact of the matter is that our civil government, the Continental Congress, had ultimate control. And they were fearful that the military leaders could potentially take over the government. That's what had happened in every revolution before, whether it was Caesar, or Cromwell in the English Revolution. And so they wanted to have some control over the military, and they felt that it was their responsibility to pick Washington's major generals, the officers upon whom he depended the most. And so they came up with a quota system that each state would get two major generals. And since Connecticut already had two major generals, Benedict Arnold, the highest-ranking brigadier general with the best record, would be overlooked for promotion, while five inferior officers would be elevated past him to major general. And this just infuriated him. And Washington was appalled, wrote to Arnold, "Look, I'm going to do everything I can to fix this." That was really what began his bitter slide towards treason. You know, here he is. He's doing as much as anyone to win this war, and yet the political leaders refuse to acknowledge, to give him any respect for what he's doing.
Well, you mentioned that he was then, shortly after being passed over for this promotion, wounded in the Battle of Saratoga. What happened? And did that injury end effectively his military career, really, as a field officer?
Yeah, it was a terrible injury. I mean, he led this courageous, if not reckless, charge towards the end of the battle through the sally port of a redoubt and was shot through a leg he had already injured. The horse collapsed, was killed and collapsed on that injured leg. And he would be bedridden for months, his injured leg in a fracture box, and he couldn't walk for more than a year. He couldn't ride a horse for two. And it effectively ended his military career for that next 3 years. After his treason, once he became a British soldier, he would be able to participate in battle again. But for the 3 years after the Battle of Saratoga, he was pretty much immobilized. And for Arnold, this messed with his head. I mean, he was psychically wounded as much as he was physically. He had been treated badly by his commanding officer, Horatio Gates, at Saratoga, who feared Arnold would get credit for the battle. He suffered this traumatic injury. He wasn't getting the recognition. So he began to dwell bitterly on his fate.
Now, when Benedict Arnold did determine he was going to switch sides, did he do it out of pragmatism? Did he do it out of a need to secure his financial position? Did he do it out of spite? Or was it all of it?
It was all of that. He felt there was more than a little narcissism in Benedict Arnold. He was able to convince himself that whatever was best for him was best for everyone else. And he felt that the country was falling apart, and it was. The Continental Congress did not have the power or the ability to tax the people. The Continental Army didn't have clothes, the provisions it desperately needed. The country seemed to have turned its back on the cause that it had embraced back in 1776. And you know, some were fearing that if Washington somehow could win this war, there would be no country left to claim victory. And Arnold convinced himself that it was better for his country for the British to come back and reinstate some order. And contributing to this, though, and I think one of the big factors is, while in Philadelphia, he met this beautiful young girl, Peggy Shippen, 18, half his age, with loyalist leanings, who had befriended British officers during the British occupation of Philadelphia. And within a month of his marriage to Peggy, he would send his first letter to the British spy master, John Andre, who had been a friend of Peggy's, and that would begin the correspondence that would ultimately lead to his treason.
So throughout all this, as you mentioned, George Washington had defended Benedict Arnold in front of Congress, said that he should have been promoted when he wasn't. He had a little bit of an admiration for Benedict Arnold, but also realized that Benedict Arnold's temperament and way of dealing with people in the political sphere of both the Army and dealing with Congress was his undoing. What was Washington's reaction when he heard of deception and treason?
Washington had kind of a blind spot when it came to Arnold. He deeply respected him. He needed generals like this. And then when he heard in the September of 1780 that one of his best battlefield generals had betrayed him, he was actually at Arnold's headquarters. Arnold by this time had fled down the river to British-occupied New York. And Washington turned to the young French general Lafayette, who had become kind of a surrogate son to him, and he said to him, "Whom can we trust now?" And I think that really speaks to the deep sense of pain and loss that Washington felt. He took it very personally, and this would change the nature of the War of Independence after this. It would become very personal for Washington and his officers, because Arnold would fight on the British side, go down to Virginia, where he would burn Richmond, and be once again a very effective officer. And I think there's no accident that within a year of Arnold's defection, America would enjoy the great victory at Yorktown. And this is the great irony of Arnold's treason. He had been so effective on the battlefield in the early years of the Revolution, but it was as a traitor that he kind of served the cause of America the best, because this was huge news to the Americans. He was burned in effigy in towns up and down the eastern seaboard, and people were outraged, and they began to realize that this War of Independence was ours to lose, and it was Benedict Arnold that kind of provided that wake-up call.
Nathaniel Philbrick is a historian and the best-selling author of In the Heart of the Sea, Mayflower, and many other books. His latest book is called Valiant Ambition. Nathaniel Philbrick, thanks for talking to us this morning.
Oh, it's been great to talk to you.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.